There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Coming up on NFL Live, there is a new top dog in the NFC after Sunday. Do the 49ers have something to worry about after their home upset loss? The Cowboys snapped a three-game skid to remain at the top of the NFC East. We'll talk about who has the edge between Dallas and Philly for that division. And the Patriots still in the center of another off-the-field issue, the latest on the NFL's investigation into New England's videotaping incident coming up. We are happy to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Getting close to Christmas. I'm Wendy Nix, Chris Mortensen, Ryan Clark, and Tim Hasselbeck. We start with what was a dramatic turn of events in San Francisco. Here's how it played out.
8 seconds to go. This could be the whole difference between winning the NFC West or not.
Ryan the snap. Clock starts. Matt throws. End zone. Hooper! Touchdown, Atlanta! Austin Hooper, the touchdown catch!
Kyle Shanahan can't believe it.
Martell Harris is saying that ball hit the ground.
This will be a discussion here because this looks like this ball comes loose at the end.
This is going to Park Avenue and Riverone. It was called a touchdown. Boy, I don't know. Here
After
is the
review,
call.
The ball hit the ground. Is an incomplete pass.
Incomplete! Whoa! Not over yet, though.
Atlanta's going to have one more shot. All right, last play of the game.
Throwing a crossing route. Caught! But they tackle him on the goal line. Is he short? I think he's down to the one-yard line. I don't think he got in. They tackled him shy.
That should be a touchdown.
This is going to be something.
The runner possessed the ball and broke the plane. Therefore, it is a touchdown.
49ers lose.
And Atlanta's going to win the game on the final play.
And there you go. The Julio Jones touchdown could have massive implications on the NFC playoff race. Before the touchdown, the Niners were 65% favorites to get home field advantage, according to our Football Power Index. Now, that drops to 44% with the Seahawks close behind. The Saints and Packers also saw their home field chances go up with the 49ers loss. So it's Monday, and what do? We overreact. I'll say this, the 49ers offense is too inconsistent to win the Super Bowl. Ryan, is that an overreaction?
Listen, that's an overreaction for me. When we've watched this offense progress throughout the season, it's been because Kyle Shanahan has found ways to get Jimmy G open looks and also get this running game going. If you look at what went on yesterday, there was also some defensive issues. You're missing two starting defensive backs and missing Tart, also Richard Sherman. They also had a fumble by George Kittle late in the game, and he's a guy you know you can count on most times. And so for me, obviously you want Jimmy G to play well week in and week out, but there's going to be some inconsistencies there. This is a complete team with a very good head coach, so I expect them to fix these things, and they can win games down the stretch because they're so versatile offensively and also great on the defensive end.
It's an overreaction for me. I think it's a really good defense. I agree with what Ryan said. I mean, they lost the game. Could have been a different outcome with a couple of different things or maybe some healthy players. But I also think we also need to give Atlanta a little bit of credit because it's an Atlanta team that since their bye week has been hard for basically everybody they've faced. They've done a really good job. This is pro football. You know, there are very few teams that, aren't competitive. And I would not put the Falcons in that group. I mean, let's face it, just look at the plays that Julio made in this football game. You're defending as good of a wide receiver as you'll see in the NFL. So, it's a disappointing loss because of the swing for the 49ers. I mean, from being the one seed to the five seed, obviously.
I think that's what makes
brutal,
it so
Yeah, I mean, it's notable. Alarming, in that way. But at the same time, I think you also have to look at what Atlanta's done and take that into consideration when you look at this loss.
I mean, I don't mean to cut Ward off.
Yeah, you look do. At,
look,
go ahead.
I love it. Look at what this team has done. You beat the Saints at home, and you beat the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, they had a bye and came back as a different team.
With a pass rush.
Yeah.
And we're going to review a little bit more about Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Falcons, what he's done since he's restructured the staff with that Falcons team and that Falcons defense specifically. But I say it's an overreaction because the 49ers, I'm never going to worry about Kyle Shanahan's offense.
Yeah.
I do think, we can wonder about Jimmy Garoppolo now and then, But Matt Breida is going to come back, one of the running backs at some point. They're going to get all hands on deck. And defense, yeah, we forget that defense actually helps an offense. Field position,
yep,
time of possession, things like that. And so, therefore, I'm not concerned about them. Yes, do you want to buy because it gives you one less game to have an injury or injuries? But I think the 49ers will be very much in this thing and very competitive through the playoffs.
And I mean, we look at this team, and obviously when you see what happens yesterday, it's kind of alarming, like you said, because you drop from 1 to 5. But also think about this team's 3 losses. You lose because you have a rookie field goal kicker who's a backup, or who you just signed, who misses a kick against the Seattle Seahawks. You lose to Julio Jones and Atlanta Falcons here, and then the most accurate kicker of all time beats you on the road in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. This is a very good team that has lost some really close games. We haven't seen them taken to the woodshed at all this year. Right. So to say this offense isn't good because of a day like yesterday just isn't cool.
Also, they've been close games. Also, all 3 of those losses came down to the last minute,
yeah,
or so. Mm-hmm. So it's just been, in some ways, fluke situations. Mm-hmm. Having said that, that can be all the difference in the playoffs too. Yeah. So
I would say this, because we talked about in our VMA, you know, the Austin Hooper play that hit the ground, they nullified that touchdown. Yeah. There were some people that
looking at it, and I'm like, I think the ball's on his foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, yeah, it was moving, but I'm not sure it ever hit the ground. But, I was surprised.
But I will say this, for as much criticism as we've given Al Riveron in the league office on reviews, I think if that game had ended on the Austin Hooper touchdown, I think we'd be talking about that a whole lot today. Huh. I think the fact that they got it right on Julio Jones, because remember, the on-field officials did not call that touchdown.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, you have to say that was, mm-hmm, I like the way it finished, if it was going to finish with the Falcons score.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment as well. We move on to the Cowboys, where there's no doubt they're saying thank you Ezekiel Elliott today. He had 103 rushing yards early in the second half, finished with 160 total yards to go along with 2 touchdowns as the Cowboys embarrassed the Rams. They now face an all-important divisional rematch with the Eagles that will possibly and quite probably will decide that division. Here's Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott after the game.
Just what the doctor ordered, to get you out of the whatever you're in. And I must say, I guess I'm going to have to get me a new coin flip caller out there. But no, seriously, really proud, because that does renew the team's confidence in its work. This one was richly deserved and came along at a good time for us.
Momentum is a dangerous thing, and it's about getting it on our side. And we've just got to build off tonight. Simple as that. We're still not where we want to be. We haven't necessarily peaked, but we're heading in the right direction, and we've just got to continue to build and get better.
So the Cowboys hang on to the lead in the NFC East thanks to their head-to-head win over the Eagles in Week 7. Dallas can clinch with a win in Philadelphia on Sunday. That would make the Cowboys the first team to repeat as NFC East champs since 2004. Overreaction Monday continues with this. The Cowboys will win the NFC East. Gentlemen.
This is not an overreaction, and it's not necessarily about the Cowboys, although the team that showed up yesterday was the team that Jerry Jones had been expecting all season
along.
This is why he's been so upset with coaching, upset with losing games he expects to win, because he believed that he put a roster together that could do exactly what they did yesterday. But when you look at the Eagles, and I think you have to give some credit to Carson Wentz and what he's found a way to do against the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Redskins. No matter what you say about those two teams, the Philadelphia Eagles are depleted. He threw a touchdown to an ex-quarterback who was playing in a different league, who was on practice squad this year, Greg Ward, who had to make a great play to get a catch over Josh Norman, who's a Pro Bowler in his career. So what that team has done is great, but the reason it's so impressive is because they're depleted, and they have a secondary that hasn't played well all season. So as much as the Dallas Cowboys should win because they're the better roster, the Philadelphia Eagles are just playing with one hand tied behind their backs.
It's not an overreaction. Or no, it is.
No, the Cowboys will win the NFC, so you think they will.
The Cowboys, it's not an overreaction. Listen, Dallas, they played great in the second quarter, and their concerns were on defense. If you talk to them internally, they were really concerned about their defense, assignments, technique, coordination between the back end and the front end. And they got that straightened out. But the Eagles, as Ryan said, are a depleted group. Now, they're going to be at home, but the Cowboys, I think, what was the record? The Cowboys have done quite well there at Lincoln Financial Field.
7-2.
7-2, I think,
Jason Garrett.
Under Jason Garrett. So they're not afraid to go in there and play, but they're the better team. And, yeah, I mean, listen, the Eagles were down by 14 at home to the New York Giants a week ago. And then yesterday you saw they had to rally against the Redskins. And it's because Carson Wentz answered the bell at the very moment he needed to.
Mm-hmm. It's not an overreaction. I agree with both of you guys. And I think the other aspect of it is, you know, more you said they're the better team. I would agree with that. And I think when they play their best football, let's just be honest, they just ran the Rams off the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, really from start to finish.
Yeah, and the Rams have been up and down all season long. But, like, you know, all we talk about is how Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in the league and how they got other good guys in their front. And they embarrassed them yesterday.
Yeah.
They had two backs, you know, combined go for over, you know, about 250 yards. Like, that's an embarrassment
that's
in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I look at what they can be when they are playing well, running the football. They have good players on defense. They have a quarterback at the beginning part of the season. People were talking about, well, maybe he's playing at an MVP level. I just think they can be really good. If this really, in fact, is momentum, you know, to kind of propel them into the postseason, then I think they're a dangerous team in the postseason.
I think they absolutely are.
Because they'll be hosting winning the division means you're hosting a playoff game. And you've got to get a mouthful of that run game. That could be a problem for just about anybody.
Yeah, and next week, when they lose to the Eagles, next Monday we'll be talking about.
that will be a different situation.
How do you
figure
this league out for the most part? It's been tough.
Look, they get in two wins. You're talking about a championship. I mean, you just don't know with a team that has that kind of talent. Mm-hmm. They could get hot. And then you talk about Jason Garrett, and that's a topic for another time. But
well, he might keep his job then.
I know we already had it gone, but you never know. Drew Brees will look to set another record on the Monday night stage. In 2011, he broke Dan Marino's single-season passing record with a 9-yard touchdown to Darren Sproles in the fourth quarter. Last season, he broke Peyton Manning's all-time passing record when he hit Tre'Quan Smith for a 62-yard score. And now three touchdowns away from breaking Manning's all-time record, that could mean another Monday milestone moment. And who will be there? Lisa Salters from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And Lisa, the Saints can stay in the conversation for a postseason bye with a win tonight. Do you get the sense they've been able to move on quickly from that loss in the wild showdown with San Francisco last Sunday?
Yeah, Wendy, you really do. Sean Payton said last week's game against the 49ers felt like a playoff game and felt like the number one seed in the NFC was on the line. Because it kind of was. Now in the three spot, Peyton said, yes, it was a difficult loss, but he said he told his players, we're going to play in bigger games than that one, and we just might see the 49ers again. So we got to move on. Drew Brees and the offense put 46 points on the board last week, but the Saints defense gave up 48, a unit that until last week had really been the team's backbone for much of the season. Defensive end Cam Jordan said, it was back to basics for the D this week in practice. The challenge has been made for our defense, he said. Coaches to players, players to players. This is a full-blown respond week for the defense, he said. We'll see if the D does respond.
It's also an elimination game for the Colts. Their best offensive weapon, T.Y. Hilton, has not played since week 12 with a calf injury. What is his status, Lisa, for tonight?
Yeah, Wendy, he's going to play, and that's certainly good news for Indianapolis. T.Y. Hilton has missed six games this season, and the Colts are 1-5 in those games. He hasn't played since week 12 because of a calf injury, and head coach Frank Reich said he wasn't going to play Hilton until he was 100%. Reich told us last night that though Hilton was limited in practice this week, he was able to go at full speed and is fully healthy. Colts quarterback Jacoby Brissett said he's pretty sure that teams have different defensive plans for playing against them based on whether Hilton is playing or not. He just commands that type of respect, and he's right, Wendy. Hilton's career average of 15.6 yards a catch is third highest in the league among active players.
Lisa, thank you. We'll check back in shortly. For the Colts, we mentioned this, but they absolutely need a win to keep their playoff hopes alive. They are eliminated with one more loss. On the other hand, the Saints need a win to keep pace in the race for home field advantage in the NFC with the Seahawks, Packers, and Niners all sitting at 11-3. One big key, clearly, for Indy's defense tonight will be keeping the league's leading receiver, Michael Thomas, in check. Does the Colts' secondary have what it takes?
Well, I think they need to have a plan to do something differently than, quite honestly, basically what everybody else in the league has done. But Michael Thomas already is over 100 catches on the season. The next closest leading receiver for the Saints is Ted Ginn. I think he has 28 receptions on the season. Like, that's incredible. It just goes to show you that how much of their passing attack rolls through Michael Thomas, which means, you know, we praise Bill Belichick when he takes a guy, you know, out of a game plan when it's like, hey, that's their number one guy. Make somebody else beat you. Don't get beat by what the team does best. Well, Alvin Kamara has not been the same recently. Yeah. I don't know if it's a quad injury or what's ailing him, but he hasn't been the same. And so everything basically has run through Michael Thomas. If I'm the Colts, I'm doing everything I can to double him as many times as I can throughout the game so that he doesn't do what he's done all season long.
For me, it's about the other side of the ball and the New Orleans Saints defense. When Teddy Bridgewater was the quarterback of this team, they go on a run because the defense played extremely well. They made plays on special teams, and Michael Thomas and Teddy Bridgewater found ways to make enough plays to win game. Since the Atlanta Falcons, this defense hasn't been the same. Marshawn Lattimore goes out in that game. Julio Jones gets rolling and they lose. They go to Carolina. They play against Carolina. Carolina puts up 31 against this team as well. And you give up almost 50 to the San Francisco 49ers. This defense needs to figure out a way to get back to playing high level football, because when they won the Super Bowl with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, it was because of defense. When they played extremely well, it's been because the defense has excelled and brought something different to the team other than just Drew Brees doing everything. They need to get back to that if they want to compete with some of these great teams in the NFC.
I would say bingo, because there's so much focus on Drew Brees and Michael Thomas. That's all anybody talks about. That defense, I think that was the unit that gave Sean Payton and the organization the confidence factor that they could go get another Super Bowl. But they have lost in the last few weeks. Sheldon Rankins, former number one pick on the defensive line, and Marcus Davenport for the year, pass rusher. That's why I say everybody's pay attention to the waiver wire today. Terrell Suggs, we'll find out which team put in a claim for him. Mm-hmm. It's going to be more than one team. We all know he would like to go to the Baltimore Ravens, but they're last in the waiver order in terms of pick claims. The Saints would pick before them, and Suggs could probably help them out. He had 5.5 sacks and 4 forced fumbles with the Arizona Cardinals. He wants to go to the Ravens. He doesn't get his choice in this. He's not an expensive pickup, but I think somebody before even the Saints make their claim will probably claim Terrell Suggs and have them help. But that's what the Saints are missing right now, and they can't get that back.
Yeah.
What is it with Drew Brees on Monday night? I think we'll see that record, yes, you think?
Well, if we see a Peyton Manning video again, then we'll know that he had broke the record.
Cue Peyton Manning videos on Monday night. We'll see, and we'll check back in with Lisa Salter shortly. 5 teams clinched playoff berths yesterday. The Seahawks, the Packers, and 49ers in the NFC, the Patriots and the Bills out of the AFC. And do not forget, Saints, Ravens, and Chiefs have already punched their ticket to the postseason, leaving 4 spots up for grabs. The Patriots pulled away in the second half against the Bengals on Sunday to snap their 2-game losing streak, but all is not quite right as Tom Brady completed just 35% of his passes to wide receivers, none gaining more than 15 yards. And that brings us to more overreactions on this Monday, and as he often does, Mike Tannenbaum joins us. Tim doesn't like it when you come back.
What are you talking about?
I love it. You told me. But we're glad to have you.
He's less smart, so I'm like, come on, bring him in.
He couldn't get it to you in Bass, Wendy. He had to go to BC.
There's a little thing there. All right, listen, we are going to let you start as I say this. The Patriots offense will prohibit another Super Bowl run. Is that an overreaction?
I think that's a slight overreaction. The one name to keep an eye on is N'Keal Harry, their first-round pick. I really like this guy coming out. He reminded me a lot of Anquan Boldin. We still have chronologically, we got to keep in mind, we have another 6 weeks to go. There's a lot of practice time left and a lot of reps that he can get more comfortable with Tom Brady. He made a big play yesterday against Cincinnati. And to me, he's the one explosive element that they can exploit on offense. When I watch Mohamed Sanu, I think his best days are behind him. Julian Edelman looks beat up, but I think Harry could be a difference maker.
Yeah, I won't sit on the fence the way Mike did.
I'll just say it's
an overreaction. But a lot of basically what you're saying, Mike, is that I do think that N'Keal Harry ends up getting better. I think that they're just well enough coached that I think we'll see improvement. I think with their bigger issue outside of wide receiver, has been the offensive line.
Yeah.
And I think that Dante Scarnecchia, with, you know, potentially another 6 weeks of coaching those guys, I think improves the play along the offensive line. I think that Josh McDaniels does a good job of helping create offense when they need it to be created. And, you know, I think when you look at New England, the one thing that really hasn't happened with them kind of underperforming is that the quarterback's not turning the football over. That's really the fastest way to lose. And so I think if you had a quarterback turning the ball over, like if he was playing like Phillip Rivers, Brady was playing like Rivers, they'd be like, yeah, they're going to hold him back.
They'd also not be 11-3 if Brady was playing that way.
But they're 11-3, and so no, I don't think that it's – I don't think it's going to keep him out of the Super Bowl. That won't be it.
I think it's an overreaction, but in saying it's an overreaction is not saying I think they're a team that's going to go to the Super Bowl. But it's just hard to count out a team that's so well coached, a team that has so much experience on that side of the ball at the quarterback position. And also with Josh McDaniels being the offensive coordinator, we watched this team struggle through the Super Bowl offensively, but find a way to win. And I think they're a complete team. It's not just about what they can do from an offensive standpoint. And so when you play against the New England Patriots, you understand you're going to have to beat them in all phases of the game, not just one. And they'll find ways to make plays. You see, yesterday they struggled throughout the first half. You get Gilly to come up with an interception. He comes up with the pick six, and then the offense got rolling a little bit. Tom Brady does have to play better, but in order to do that, he also needs to be protected.
I'm going on the overreaction part on this one. And it was the Tom Brady's pass to N'Keal Harry opened my eyes a little bit. I said, thinking, in 4 or 5 more weeks, that can maybe be a little more dynamic. And the offensive line absolutely has to be better. Because Tom Brady, like any quarterback, and especially any 42-year-old quarterback, we haven't seen many of those.
I was about to say,
they don't like to get hit. Mm-hmm. But he still does a good job of not taking a sack, and not having many turnovers. You think they're going to get this fixed because they are the Patriots. It doesn't mean that Tom Brady has to play at that Tom Brady level. I saw Peyton Manning win a Super Bowl in his last season. Yeah. Where he wasn't the Peyton Manning we all knew, but he understood what complimentary football meant. That's
John Elway, same thing, the Super Bowl.
And John Elway is the same thing. And I know this much, on the other side of the ball, you got Stephon Gilmore and all those other players. So I don't think the offense is going to hold him down. I'm not totally buying in on the offense, but I think knowing that team, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt that it's going to grow, it's going to get better.
They've earned that benefit of the doubt. And the football IQ that Tom Brady has that comes with all these years, it can't compensate for everything, but it can certainly make a difference along – of course, with the head coach. That wasn't the only story, of course, about the Patriots over the weekend. Last week, a story broke about a videographer hired by the team reportedly following a Patriots advanced scout as part of a web series. Now, the NFL has been investigating that footage, which we had not seen before now, until Fox aired the tape on Sunday. Take a look.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advanced scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advanced scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. It's my bad.
That's not the field.
Why you would think you could take that?
I didn't know. I didn't know. Sorry. But I can delete this right here for you.
Damage is done, my friend.
No, it isn't, because we delete it.
Once again, it's
gone.
29 yards on the punt.
I can't get that.
29 yards.
Roger Goodell has disciplined the Patriots twice before as the commissioner. The 2007 Spygate scandal resulted in fines and the loss of a first-round pick. And the 2015 Deflategate punishment even harsher, with Tom Brady serving a 4-game suspension in 2016. Here's our former Patriot, Teddy Bruschi, yesterday on Sunday NFL Countdown.
Who thought this was a good idea? All right, they've denied it, and Bill said that he has nothing to do with Kraft Productions. And I know Kraft Productions, and they're a separate part of the building, but however, Kraft Production is under the umbrella, which is the New England Patriots, so it looks bad. With everything good that's going on with the organization this year in terms of the celebration of the NFL 100, talking about Bill Belichick as one of the best coaches of all time, him and Saban this week talking about their philosophies and why they're such great coaches, and then you get this. And all it does is open up that wound and open up that scab so everybody can just say they're cheaters once again. What were we thinking? I'm a member of the New England Patriots for my entire career, and I'm thinking, what were you thinking that this was a good idea to bring in a camera crew? Still, you want to do your job series? I've seen it with the video personnel, with Jim Whalen and the training staff. They're good little pieces, yes. But this one, this was the wrong idea to do it. They weren't thinking what it would perceive, how the optics were. And I don't blame the league, and I don't blame anyone out there that reopens all of this stuff and give you an easy opportunity to call the New England Patriots cheaters because of all their success, because the way it looks is terrible. And I don't like the way it looks, and I'm disappointed that someone didn't have the awareness in that organization not to go through and say, wait a second, maybe we shouldn't do this because it doesn't look good.
Teddy's former teammate Tom Brady addressed the latest Patriots controversy this morning on WEEI in Boston.
I don't think any player gave it one second of thought, so not something that, you know, even registered. So you just move on, man. There's a lot of distractions out there, and if you can lose focus and on your job, then that's really a waste of your time. So there's a lot of, you know, people out there that, you know, they can create distractions for us, but, you know, we just want to go out there and focus on what we can do and what our job is and try to go out there and play as best we possibly can.
The investigation by the league is ongoing, and the commissioner said last week they would not make any comment until they had all the information. Where are we now?
Well, it's a very tight-lipped NFL league office, and they're telling everybody the same thing. I'm talking about teams. They're going to be comprehensive, so they say. And there's not going to be any timeline, and you'll know it probably about 30 minutes before they tell the teams or tell the Patriots what the discipline will be, and the expectation there will be discipline. Last week they got this tape. We also saw yesterday they've already had all of that. NFL security does. The rest of the league office, they were in Dallas for the league meetings, as you know, and then they had labor negotiations. So they really kind of start crunching today, this week. And so we'll see whether this goes fast. There's no doubt that the Patriots have admitted. They admitted everything that we saw on that tape. Mm-hmm. And Diana Rossini actually reported the conversation as well. And it's just, but that audio and video will energize this. And it energizes it in such a way that you understand why Teddy Bruschi, who's been called the perfect Patriot by Bill Belichick himself, was so frustrated and hurt and thought, yeah, who thought this was a good idea? And the league itself, I do believe, as Roger Goodell said, their history will be taken into account. The key thing is, can they tie football operations in any way possible to the videographer and the production crew? That's the key. And did the advanced scout himself, and you know what advanced scouts do, did he instruct them at all to videotape? That'll be a key to this as well.
Mike, you were a GM with the Jets when a number of these situations involving New England were ongoing. What is your expectation for ultimately what the league decides to do?
Yeah, to kind of piggyback on what Mort said, just to take you behind the curtains, the way organizations work, you have football and you have business, and these sort of things where you're trying to create pieces, social media content, video shows, that's on the business side. So on the football side, we may have like a very loose understanding of, hey, these are the three or four people we're going to do features on. These are the general themes. But Bill Belichick's the coach. He's the GM. He doesn't have the time or the wherewithal to say, hey, what's going on over there with any more specifics. With that said, somebody on that side of the house has to know what the rules are and make sure that they're followed carefully. So there should be some sort of fine for this. But this has nothing to do with football operations, getting ready to play the Bengals or the Bills. It's a million miles apart. The optics, I get it, are bad. And sure, they didn't follow protocol. But this has nothing to do with ultimately, what everyone's concerned about, did they have a competitive advantage? And absolutely, they didn't, because this is, again, they were trying to capture content for some of their online programming.
What did the two of you see when you watched that video?
I don't see necessarily anything that helps a great deal. Obviously, it was a short snippet of the video, but more than anything, Teddy Bruschi's upset because it was stupid.
Right. I think that was his point.
When you're looking at the organization and you understand the history of your organizations, the fines, the accusations of cheating, you should know, okay, this one might not be the one that we need to do. And if we are going to do it, we need to do it in a certain way. So it was a lack of organization wherewithal. You have to be aware of the way that you are perceived, and to go out there and do this, or to have somebody who can actually say, I didn't know, I didn't understand the rule, that is unacceptable. Now, I'm a guy who's a Pittsburgh Steeler and has been on the side of many fans believing that the New England Patriots have cheated. I still believe that they've cheated before. I don't think this time it was that situation. I don't think that football operations had anything to do with this, but it is a huge black eye. They will be punished, and they should be.
Yeah, it's a really bad sense of awareness. Teddy's right about that. I think a couple of things jump out to me. In terms of what you see on the video, is there a lot that you can glean from the video? No, I don't believe there is, especially with the coach-to-quarterback or coach-to-defensive play caller communication that exists in the NFL. Does that mean that signals no longer exist in the NFL? No, that's not what it means. There are plenty of people that still signal, and they'll signal adjustment. So you can get information. Like, is it as vital as the actual play call? No, but you can get information. And, you know, taking the Patriots out of it, like anytime someone is cheating, they're just looking for some small advantage to help them, to give them some type of an edge. And I would just say this, like my perspective most definitely was, this probably was this do your job feature and all of that. As tight as that shot is on the sideline, that was surprising to me, just plain and simple. And I think it was surprising to the Bengals security guy to be like, wait a minute, that's not the field. That is as tight as you can get on the sideline.
And that's what
you don't even see any.
They said that in their statement last Monday night.
Right. So I'm saying that is tight. Okay. And if this employee has been there for 18 years, he was working there when Spygate was going on.
Right.
Like there is a lot. And so the point that there's two houses and there's the business side and there's the football side, Teddy said it. It's under the umbrella of the New England Patriots.
Right. And again,
so part of it for me when you look at that is, look, look, they also did a feature on the equipment guy. You know what I mean? There was an element of that where you're like, that might not have been a great idea.
Well, ESPN wanted to do something on the cameraman or the people in the control room. Mm-hmm. That's what this type of series is. The people, the fans, the public don't get to see what they do. Now, let me just throw this out there. The previous operation, 2007, Spygate, whatever you want, that was the name we gave it. Bill Belichick admitted they were doing it. And he argued to the commissioner that they were within the rules, and they weren't, and he got punished for it. In this situation, they went into the press box with three people, two of them freelancers and one of them full-timer. Yeah. As somebody pointed out, they set up a tripod and a monitor in full view of a Bengals employee.
Yeah.
And they went in, they were doing their piece, and he wasn't going to shoot the advanced scout the whole time, but you do that in front of a Bengals security guy. And one point somebody made to me, he said, if you think Bill Belichick would ever let two freelance a camera shooter and the audio tech be involved in one of their football operations, that's the key, the football operations, you don't know Bill Belichick.
Well, I will say this. I know the guys involved in the original Spygate stuff, and they weren't long-term employees of the company.
But they were employees, right?
They were, but it wasn't like, you know, they were, you know, CIA-level employees that they were trusting. And so I think there are a lot of people that touch the operations, from the video department to the equipment department and all of that stuff. I think it would surprise people. Look, I think you're right. I think this is for their piece. But that doesn't mean there shouldn't be a punishment for videoing a sideline when you're not allowed to do that.
The videographer and the audio tech are freelance guys that could be doing something for us next week.
Yep.
Or CBS or NBC or Fox.
I think
that's why I don't think they would have.
The biggest thing is, though, if you get caught robbing the bank two times and you hang out in the bank a lot, you can't say it's because your girlfriend works there. Right, you're going to have to do your best job to make sure you stay away from the bank, to make sure you're not in any type of situation where somebody can say you are trying to do the same thing again. And so just from an oversight,
you have to do a better job of not doing things like that.
Right,
yeah,
but again, to RC's point, again, this is so far from anything else that's happened in the past because, again, just to take you behind the scenes, the last thing those guys worry about on the football side is, who's shooting what this week? You know, that's a million miles away from what they're...
Mike, you say that, but if you're going to do a profile on an advanced scout, or you're going to do a profile on an assistant coach, there's no way that the head coach doesn't know that, hey, we're doing a do-your-job profile on the advanced scout. There's no way that you don't know that.
Right, but that's different than having the guy actually shoot the sideline.
There's no shot that the head coach does not know that they're doing a do-your-job profile on an advanced scout or on someone, he knows who it is.
Right. And Tim, they may get a list on a monthly basis. Hey, these 10 people, these five families.
Right.
But what I'm saying is the attention and detail of, like, what is allowed. In
correct. Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Of the content, the actual content.
Right. Sure. Somebody dropped the ball and didn't tell those people what the rules were, and that's where they should be fined. But that, again, to me, has nothing to do with a competitive advantage.
Right. I think there's two arguments here. There's a lot of folks, I think we're all in agreement, that say this was really not about a competitive football advantage. Nevertheless, a rule was broken, and you can't have a reputation as the most buttoned-up, detail-oriented, leaves-no-stone-unturned organization mm-hmm. and then say, oh, we missed that one. We didn't know. You know, you can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. To the quarterback who beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl, including once at the end of that Spygate season, Eli Manning perhaps playing his final Giants home game. He got a standing ovation from teammates and fans at the end of this one, and the game ball presented to him in the locker room.
This guy's gotten many game balls.
Yeah.
But let's give him one more. Eli Manning.
Yeah! Doesn't matter what the feeling is, what the season's going, there's not a better feeling than a win in the locker room on a Sunday, boys. So I appreciate this one. It's special. And let's keep it rolling, all right? I'll see y'all Wednesday.
Yeah!
I love that because I'm not sure. I think he gave the team a day off, Mort.
He
yes?
did, and Pat Schumer was probably, he doesn't normally give the team a Monday off after a win.
Overreaction Monday, though, Eli Manning will play in the NFL next season. More.
Let's say overreaction, and I think that, yes, as Tim pointed out last week, there's still some burning desire to play football. He loves playing football, but you have to have a place to play football. So you think about three different places. We talked about the Tennessee Titans. What's going to happen with Ryan Tannehill? That's some place. I think his wife, Abby, is from Nashville. And then people have been talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, I think Jameis Winston is going to get a new franchise tag or some type of 2-year deal. I think he's going to be in with Tampa Bay with the way he's playing lately. And then one team playing tonight, Indianapolis Colts, where Peyton started his career, his brother Peyton started his career. Jacoby Brissett's doing okay. Would that be a place where you can protect him? But I don't think they've come to a conclusion yet on Jacoby Brissett. I'm going to say overreact. He's probably not going to be playing. He'll probably retire as a Giant.
All right, Tim, how about this one? Phillip Rivers will start for another team next season. We're rolling through some quarterback issues on Overreaction Monday.
I'm going to say this is not an overreaction because I think he's a little bit like Eli. Like, I think there's a desire to play, and I think, while there's been some bad moments, I think there are plenty of good moments, and I think that there's just going to be enough. I think there's going to be enough openings. I think there's going to be spots where, but maybe it is – Jameis, in Tampa. Maybe it is Ryan Tannehill, but in Tennessee. But I just think there are going to be spots that are, trying to figure out the quarterback situation. I'm not sure it's going to be a great situation for Phillip. Maybe he doesn't because of his family. But I just, watching him play seems like a guy who wants to keep playing.
All right, how about Derek Carr? He will not be the Raiders quarterback next year in Las Vegas, Ryan.
You know what? I think this is an overreaction. There's going to be a lot of change for this team in moving from Oakland to Las Vegas. And I know that makes people think, okay, let's change the quarterback and move in a different direction. But when Derek Carr is protected, when Josh Jacobs is running the ball well, he is a talented quarterback. And so it's going to depend on what they want to do. I understand they won't lose a lot of money in letting Derek Carr go, but he's a good football player. He's a quarterback that's had success in this league. He was on track to winning the MVP before hurt a few seasons ago. And so they'll see what's on the board, what's available for them at their draft pick or what's available in free agency and go from there. But I can't say that right now you just move on from Derek Carr, because what will you get to replace him and how good will they be?
Quarterbacks don't grow on trees. Mike Tannenbaum, you know that, so take this one for me. The Bucs need to keep Jameis Winston as their starting quarterback. We know he's a free agent after the season.
There'll be no offense sitting here. This is a massive overreaction. Don't do it. Yes. Please, Tampa Bay, please don't. If job description number one for a quarterback is dependability week in and week out, Jameis Winston doesn't have it. He has great flash plays. He has great potential, but he's had a number of quarterback coaches, coordinators, head coaches. He turns the ball over way too much. If you want to be great in this league, you cannot turn the ball over. You talked about that earlier, Tim. That is a massive overreaction.
Man, I like
but
it.
So he
massive.
Sure lights up the dang scoreboard.
He does.
Though.
His good is good, but his bad is bad.
For which team are
everybody? He keeps it interesting.
The Buccaneers are 7-7.
That's average.
I think it's hard to move on from Jameis because as you can say, that you could find people that won't turn it over as much as him because he turns it over more than anybody. You can't say that everybody's going to put up points the way he does or move the ball the way he does. And I believe that's tantalizing. I believe it's hard to say you're just going to move on from that. So I don't know if it's as cut and dry as Mike is making it.
He didn't have Mike Evans yesterday, and Chris Godwin was lost during his two best receivers, and he still threw for what he threw for.
You know, just to keep this ESPN-centric, if we had Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez here, we would talk about the great Mark Sanchez who won four road playoff games, but he was the same player that could never get over the hump of turning the ball over.
Never threw for this many yards. Mark Sanchez ain't never looked that good.
But how many playoff games has Jameis won?
He won games. He also won into people's booty.
Tebow won a playoff game, too.
I heard you say that.
They've done that, too.
What's the enemy of great? Not good, terrible, good.
That's
the enemy
right.
of great is good. There you go. Keep you in limbo.
Terrible get everybody fired.
exactly, which is a good thing. New on NFL Live, Vikings Nation reporter Courtney Cronin reporting on Dalvin Cook's injury. Head coach Mike Zimmer said Cook feels good today and noted that this new shoulder injury is one he can play through, but it's too early to determine what kind of workload Cook may have for Green Bay. An extra day obviously helps. We'll just have to see how the week goes. Here to help us do that, Chris Mortensen in the Domino's pregame HQ for the latest Mort Report. We'll start with Urban Meyer. He was seen at the Redskins game yesterday. What does that mean?
I heard the night before that he was at the Philadelphia Eagles hotel. That was where his accommodations were. And then I heard that he'd been up, I don't know, it was the Army-Navy game or some other event, but he came on down to Washington. He saw Daniel Snyder. But you know what? He recruited and had Dwayne Haskins as a quarterback. Terry McLaurin, their receiver, was somebody he recruited and had as well at Ohio State. And you saw him in the box with Alex Smith, who was his former quarterback at the University of Utah. And so I think he was really visiting people because he was in the area. That's my read on it. And he has been interesting. He's been flirting a little bit. He showed up at a Chargers game this year. He talked about the Cowboys being a great job. Now the Redskins. And one of his best friends in the world is Bill Belichick of the Patriots. But I don't believe that he is going to be the coach of the Washington Redskins.
Okay. And it was good to see Alex Smith, by the way. Just see him healthy.
Yeah. I think a guy like Marvin Lewis will end up in Washington probably more likely than Urban Meyer.
Okay.
We'll see.
All right. While we're talking about coaches, Dan Quinn, a big win, the Falcons over San Francisco. His job is one we've talked about being in jeopardy. What's the status? This certainly can't hurt.
Well, there'd been an assumption that this was it for Dan Quinn, but they had played so well. Since the bye week, when he made significant restructuring of his staff, and he took Raheem Morris from the receiver's job and put him to the defensive side. Raheem Morris calls the third downs defense. And so they are like second best in third down defense since November. And then in the red zone, it's their linebacker coach who calls the first two downs. And what's happened here is they've gone on this run, and among these two wins have been against the Saints.
Oh, yeah, great team, by the way.
And San Francisco yesterday. And I don't think Arthur Blank wants to fire Dan Quinn, and maybe they can get some momentum here and get it back. Now, some fans might be disappointed by that, but at the same time, you are seeing some things happen with Dan being willing to make those changes at a critical time during the bye week, and they're paying off.
They've been a different team, really.
The guy who took them to the Super Bowl. You can say they lost the Super Bowl.
Right.
He still took them to the Super Bowl.
Larry Fitzgerald Sr. tweeted this out on Sunday. If today is my last after 16 years of Cardinals games, supporting and watching my son play in Arizona, I'm grateful for all the Arizona fans' support in helping, loving, and always supporting him. This is Fitz's dad. Through it all, who knows what the future has. Thank you all. Which begs the question, what is the latest for Larry Fitzgerald?
Well, Larry Fitzgerald Sr. may have the story first because he is a media guy. He is a writer. He's a reporter. Columnist, so to speak. Larry Fitzgerald, after the game, Junior, acknowledged that he didn't know whether that would be his last home game, so to speak. And he said he's not going to be in it to try and pursue Jerry Rice's records. He trails Jerry Rice in three major categories. So the Cardinals want him back. He's actually their leading receiver in receptions. At the same time, Larry has a decision to make, and he has a bright future either in part ownership, front office, or in media.
Yeah, there's no question about that. He's not done.
He's a bright future no matter what.
No matter what venue, he does have a bright future. Thank you, Hannah. The Packers held on to eliminate the Bears from playoff contention on Sunday. Not the prettiest win, with Green Bay picking up a season low 12 first downs and punting on each of its last five drives. Aaron Rodgers had this to say after the fact.
I don't know that we have the full respect of the entire league at this point, based on some of our performances. Like, we're 7-1 at home. We have an inside track at the 2 seed. Obviously, we have an opportunity to wrap up the division next week. I like our chances. I like our football team.
Hey, Ryan Clark, take this one for me. Overreaction Monday. The Packers are the least respected team in the NFL.
This is an overreaction. I respect the Bengals much less. I respect the Miami Dolphins much less. The New York Giants, the New York Jets. I understand what Aaron Rodgers is saying, but he also knows there's some truth to that because of the way they've lost to the Los Angeles Chargers, the San Francisco 49ers, and some of the struggles they've had throughout the season.
I will say this. One, I agree with you, and I would agree with the teams that you respect less. But I do think they're a little bit overlooked.
Yeah,
I would agree. Overlooked is more.
We kind of, it seems like we're talking so much 49ers, so much Saints, even Seattle a little bit. And it's like kind of neglected to talk about the Packers in the year that they've had. Has it been pretty? No, but they've been good.
A better connotation than disrespect.
Aaron Rodgers, we know you're Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and there's a lot of respect there.
R-E-L-A-X.
I was just about to say, at least no one spelled for us today, but apparently that's not the case. You have to go because you're going to be on SportsCenter right at the top of the hour, right? So, yeah, you're a very big star.
Big time.
Yeah, so we're going to let Mort go. We're not, so we'll be back. Well, no matter what happens, it was nice to see Eli Manning get the win, see his family waiting for him afterwards. Listen, we got one more game to go, gentlemen.
Yep.
Shall we pick it?
I'm going with the New Orleans Saints. They're playing in the Superdome. They're at home. It's going to be 27-17. I believe that's a score that we'll see tonight. They're going to make sure Drew Brees gets that record. And I think this defense steps up and plays well against a team that's been struggling in the past.
Fair enough.
I think you're right about the record. I think Brees gets it as well. So what does he need to throw? Three?
Yep.
I think he throws three.
Right.
Which means I think they're going to score 30 points as they beat.
Ah, okay.
30-20.
I don't remember my score. I know I have the Saints winning. We're gonna make it a clean sweep. 27-10. I too think he'll throw three. So we'll see. SportsCenter is next. Hannah Storm and Keith Olbermann. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Bye, everybody.